This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Harold, Christopher, Margaret, and Jennifer Preston. Address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
On a bleak winter's morning in the early December of 1948, I visited in my office here at the Missing Persons Bureau by a woman who gave her name as Myrna Preston. Slim and not unattractive, she had fair, shoulder-length hair, and I estimated her age as being somewhere between 30 and 35. From the commencement, it was apparent that she was laboring under a considerable strain, which in the circumstances was hardly surprising.
It's my husband, Mr. Simon. He's left home and taken the children with him.
Children?
We have three, two girls and a boy.
He took them all?
Yes.
What are their ages?
Well, Jennifer's the youngest. She's just two. Margaret's four and Christopher's five.
Two, four, and five. Mm-hmm. When did they leave?
Yesterday, while I was at work.
You have a job?
3 days a week. It's quite impossible to manage on Harry's pension alone.
Harry being your husband?
Yes.
What form of pension does he receive?
From the army. He was injured during the war.
I see, and he's unable to work?
Well, it's not a case of his being unable. He simply doesn't feel disposed to.
Oh.
Though he's taken various jobs over the past year or so, but they've never lasted. He either had a row with his boss, or didn't like the work, or... well, there was always something. Finally, I decided the only thing to do was to leave him at home to look after the children and get a job myself.
Which you did, hmm?
Yes.
Now, this was how long ago?
A little over 3 months.
Your husband was agreeable?
He could hardly be otherwise. We had to have the extra money to live. Prices as they are, it's impossible to raise three children on a war pension.
Are they at school?
Christopher is. The others are too young. He stayed home yesterday, though. He had a slight cold in the head.
Hmm. What was the nature of your husband's injury, exactly?
He was wounded in the head.
Was he affected mentally?
Didn't appear to be, not at first. His vision was pretty blurry for a while, but, well, apart from that, he seemed perfectly normal. Then he began to suffer with moods, fits of depression.
Yes?
Well, there was no way of avoiding them. They just kept getting worse.
Has he been under medical supervision?
Oh, on and off. It's done him no good, though. He simply can't settle down.
When were you married?
March 1940, before he went overseas. We had a week at Southend, and I didn't see him again for over 2 years. He was home on a month's leave in 1942, and then they sent him away again for another year.
When was he wounded?
Oh, not till just near the end. He took part in the Normandy invasion. By then, we already had Christopher, and Margaret was on the way.
He was invalided home?
To a hospital in Northumberland.
How long did he spend there?
Oh, 4 months. When they discharged him, the doctors all said he was well on the road to complete recovery, that it would only be a matter of time before he was his old self again. It was so wrong.
It wasn't quite so simple,
It was anything but.
They restored his vision?
Partially. He still has to wear special glasses. Without them, he's practically helpless. But it's not his eyesight I'm worried about. It's his state of mind.
You feel he might do the children some harm?
Not intentionally, but... he's so erratic, so unpredictable.
Oh, in what way?
In every way. He has these moods and... he's likely to do anything.
You haven't thought of calling in the police, I suppose.
Oh, that's the worst thing I could do. There's no telling how he'd react.
I see.
I just want him found, that's all. So I can try and talk some sense into him.
He gave you no indication he intended leaving?
No, he threatened to once or twice, but I'm never really took him seriously.
You didn't have any argument or anything of that kind?
I know better than to argue with him. It's impossible. He has only one point of view, and that's his own. I just have to agree with everything he says, which isn't easy, believe me. But what else can I do? The slightest upset, and he's liable to sulk for weeks on end.
You've no idea, I suppose, where he might have gone.
No?
Does he have any close relatives or friends?
Why, he was an only child. His parents are dead. He's lost touch with the rest of his family. As for friends, those he had gave him up long ago.
Does he have any money?
No more than a few pounds that I know of.
Three children to look after, he'll need more than a few pounds to get very far. Did anyone see them leave the house?
Well, Mrs. Jacobs from next door said she saw them at the bus stop just after lunch.
Which bus stop is that?
On the corner, just along from where we live.
And where does the bus go to?
Into town.
By which route?
Hammersmith Road, Knightsbridge, then down Piccadilly.
Yes, thank you. I think we might look into that for a start. See if we can't ascertain exactly which bus it was and at what stop they got off. Following Mrs. Preston's departure some 20 minutes later, I duly assigned to Agent Paul Studdy the task of checking with the London Transport Service in an effort to trace the bus which had picked up our quarry and his three children on the previous day. Initially, however, it was necessary for him to question Mrs. Jacobs, the next-door neighbour who'd actually seen them waiting at the bus stop. This he did early that same afternoon, visiting the latter's home at number 29 Springfield Avenue, Fulham.
Mrs. Jacobs?
Yes. Oh, you'd be the gentleman from the Missing Persons Bureau.
That's right. Studdy's the name.
Mrs. Preston said you'd probably be coming sometime this afternoon.
Uh-huh. I understand you saw her husband and the children waiting at the bus stop yesterday.
Yes. I was on my way down to the fruit shop.
When was this?
Shortly after lunch.
Can you remember the exact time?
Oh, let me see now. I just switched off the radio. Yes, it must have been about 1:30.
Uh-huh. You didn't actually see them get on the bus?
No, but they weren't there when I passed on my way back, and I wasn't in the shop more than a minute or so, so it must have come during that time.
Did you speak to them at all?
Yes, I said hello to Chris and the girls. I don't talk to Mr. Preston.
Oh, why not?
He's quite odd. In fact, I'm rather scared of him.
Scared?
You never know what to expect from him. Not so long ago, he was hosing his front garden, and our dog started barking at him. The poor little thing was only being friendly. He certainly didn't mean any harm.
Well, what did Mr. Preston do?
Drenched him with the hose. Oh, it was a freezingly cold day. What's more, when I told him not to be so cruel, he deliberately sprayed me. Yes, I got soaked to the skin. Later on, Mrs. Preston came in to apologize. Oh, I was furious. I really was.
Well, I can't say that I blame you.
And another time, he killed three of our chickens.
Oh, how?
Oh, they got over in his yard.
Nice neighbor.
Oh, he's peculiar. Definitely peculiar. As I say, he's just one of those people. You never know what he'll do next.
Having established the route and the approximate time of the bus concerned, Studdy had little trouble in tracing it. And, late that same afternoon, he succeeded in catching up with the conductress who'd been on duty, one Elva Francis, a slim Cockney girl with a breezy manner and a cheerful smile.
You'll have to make it snappy, Mr. Studdy. I'm to take off again in 5 minutes.
Well, just a couple of questions. Won't take long. I've got a photograph here. This man boarded a bus on the corner of Springfield Avenue and Ilford Road at roughly 1:30 yesterday afternoon. He had three young children with him, two girls and a boy. You don't happen to recall seeing him, do you?
Wait a bit. Tall chap, was he?
Mm-hmm. With the thick, rimless glasses.
I remember him. He had one of the kids on his lap. The other two was hanging out of the window.
Can you tell me where they got off?
Matter of fact, I can. Hyde Park Corner, they had to change.
Change? For where?
Regent's Park. They was going to the zoo.
The zoo?
That's what she said.
Who told her?
Little boy, apparently. She said she was helping him off, and he told her that Daddy was taking him to see the lions and tigers. Apart from that, Preston had to check with her as to which bus went to Regent's Park.
Hmm.
Another thing, too. She claimed he had a wad of notes in his wallet. He wanted to pay the fare with a £5 note, but she didn't have change, so he hawked out a single.
At this point, I think a further chat with Mrs. Preston might be in order.
Yeah, I figured the same thing.
I promised to let her know if anything at all came up. She's not on the phone, unfortunately. So I'm afraid you'll have to take another trip.
Yeah, I had that figured, too. Oh, well, at least I know which bus to catch.
The Preston home was a modest brick dwelling with a narrow frontage and a small garden, the latter being separated from that of Mrs. Jacobs by a low wire fence. On his arrival, Study found Myrna Preston on the veranda, nervously smoking a cigarette.
I've been waiting out here, hoping they just might show up.
Oh, we'll find them soon enough, don't worry. Just one or two points I'd like to check with you, though.
You haven't heard anything?
Well, it looks like after they left here, they might have gone to the zoo.
The zoo?
Uh-huh. The bus conductress remembered him.
But why on earth should...
She also remarked on the fact that your husband was carrying quite a bit of money on him.
Harry was?
Hmm. She said his wallet was bulging with notes, fibers amongst them.
But it just doesn't make sense. Well, where would he get it?
Well, that's what I was hoping you could tell me.
Well, I'm sorry, but I can't even begin to think. I told Mr. Simon it was possible he might have had a few pounds put aside, but... I don't know, Mr. Study. I honestly don't know.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
A man leaves home unaccountably, taking his three children with him. His disappearance is duly investigated, and it transpires that his first act upon leaving was to accompany the children to the zoo. This, combined with the fact that he'd suddenly acquired a roll of notes, gave Study and myself more than a little to think about.
It's got me licked, Chief. I don't mind telling you. Nothing about it adds up. First place, the guy doesn't seem to have had any motive for clearing out. The second, even if he did have a motive, it seems fantastic he'd start off by taking his kids to the zoo.
Nevertheless, that is what he appears to have done.
Well, so far as we're concerned, he couldn't have chosen a worse place. They wouldn't have been noticed by anybody there.
Hardly, no.
The way I see it, there's not a chance of picking up the trail without some kind of a fresh lead. We'd just be wasting our time by trying.
Study was perfectly right, of course, and accordingly we decided to shelve matters for 24 hours in the hope that something might come up. If not, it was very clearly a case for the police. At 10 the following morning, the agent again visited our client. She'd received no word, and he then informed her of our intention.
Well, I'm afraid there's no alternative, ma'am. If there's no news by 6 this evening, we can't afford to let it go unreported.
That means it'll be in the papers.
Well, not necessarily.
But it does. It's just the sort of thing they love.
Well, even so, we don't have much choice, do we?
No, I suppose not.
Meanwhile, all we can do is keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best.
It was a few minutes to 3 that same afternoon when the phone on Study's desk rang, and a moment later he was again speaking to Myrna Preston.
He's been here, Mr. Study.
He's what?
Harry, he's been to the house.
When?
About an hour ago. I was down at Mrs. Riley's place in the next block. I couldn't have been away more than 40 minutes.
And he came while you were gone?
Well, he must have done. Jennifer's doll's missing.
A doll?
Oh, it was on the bed in the nursery. I know that because I was tidying up in there before I went out. It's not there now.
You sure he didn't just put it away somewhere without thinking?
Quite sure.
But why should he come back for a doll, of all things?
Jennifer must have wanted it. She always takes it to bed with her. She won't sleep without it.
There's nothing else gone?
Not that I can see.
Have you checked with the neighbors? Anybody spot him around?
I haven't had time. As soon as I discovered it was missing, I phoned you.
Yeah. Where are you calling from?
Well, next door. Mrs. Jacobs has a phone.
Uh-huh. Well, you better get back home. I'll be right out.
right here, Mr. Studdy, on the pillow. You can still see the imprint.
Yeah. Just an ordinary doll, was it?
Oh, quite a big one. We gave it to her last Christmas. She slept with it every night since.
Uh-huh.
And then there's this, too. I found it after I got back from phoning you.
An ashtray?
It was on the hall table. I emptied it this morning. Someone's ashed a cigarette in it since, and it certainly wasn't me. I never smoked that brand.
Has anybody else been in it all?
Only Mrs. Jacobs, and... Well, she doesn't smoke at all.
And your husband does, eh?
Oh, yes, he hardly ever stops.
Tell me, what time did you leave the house?
I think it would have been about 1:45.
1:45. You were back by 1:30?
Oh, yes, at the very latest. You know, he must have been watching for me to go out.
You know, if he was, there's a good chance that somebody might have seen him.
Yes, well, Mrs. Jacobs didn't. Nor did Mrs. Hepworth. Mm. She's on the other side. And I called out to Mrs. Landy from across the street. She didn't either.
Anybody else?
No, I didn't want to leave the house again.
Yeah. Okay, you stay here. I'll go out and do some canvassing.
Working his way first along one side of the street, then along the other, Studdy questioned every resident who was at home. None of them, it appeared, had sighted Sir Harry Preston, but one, a Mrs. Sweeney, at the very far end of the block, provided him with some worthwhile information.
There was a cab parked just round the corner. Day for hours it was. I couldn't help but wonder what it was doing there so long.
And when did you first notice it?
Oh, this morning about 12, I was sweeping the path.
Uh-huh.
And it was still there at 2.
Was it occupied?
Well, there was only the driver that I could see. He was reading a newspaper. But there could have been someone in the back. I didn't get close enough to tell.
Now, you didn't happen to see the number, I guess.
Well, no, I didn't. I wasn't all that interested. It just struck me as funny, that's all.
You say it was still there at 2?
At 2, yes. But it must have left soon after. It had gone when I went to the shop.
Well, how much later was that?
Oh, I'd say not more than 15 minutes.
15 minutes. Well, thanks a lot, Mrs. Sweeney. Could be you've given me just the lead I've been looking for.
It wasn't much, but it was well worth following up. And on his return to the office, Studdy checked with the various radio cab companies, who in turn checked with their drivers. Within an hour, a call had come through from Ajax Cabs.
You're in luck, Mr. Studdy. The cab you're after is T402, driver Arthur Johnson.
Swell. Now, where can I reach him?
You can send him to your office if you wish.
Would it be too much trouble?
Oh, no, sir, not a bit. I'll get him over right away.
Yes?
Yes, Mr. Johnson here to see you, Mr. Studdy.
Oh, thank you, Pauline. Send him in, would you?
Yes, sir. Mr. Johnson.
Come in, Mr. Johnson. Didn't waste any time.
I got a call to get here as soon as I could. What's it all about?
Well, earlier today, your cab was parked in Springfield Avenue, Fulham, for a couple of hours. Is that right?
Yes, so what of it?
What were you doing there, exactly?
Well, this fellow was waiting for someone, so he said. He told me to park, and we just sat. Didn't bother me. He was paying. Anyway, after a bit, he gets out and tells me he'll be back in a few minutes. And so he was. That's as much as I know.
Tell me, is this the man?
That's him, right enough. Queer sort of a customer.
Now, where'd you pick him up?
The Carlton Hotel.
Hmm. Did you drop him back there later?
That I did. Over 4 quid it cost him in all.
Yeah. Was he carrying anything with him?
Well, he had a suitcase.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about all I need to know. How much do I owe you?
It was 8 bob on the meter.
8 on the meter. Well, it's a good measure. We'll make it 15.
At the Carlton Hotel in Great Russell Street, Studdy went straight to the reception desk, where he spoke to the clerk who was on duty.
Uh, Do you have a guy named Preston registered here, a Harold Preston?
Oh, one moment, sir. Just have a look.
He'd have come in maybe yesterday or the day before.
Yes. See now, Preston. Preston.
That's right, Preston.
The only Preston we have listed here has three children with him.
That's him.
Yeah, you'll find him on the fourth floor, room 406.
Emerging from the lift on the fourth floor, Studdy made his way along the passage to a door marked 406 at the head of the stairs. He pressed the buzzer. Once, twice. The door opened, and he found himself confronted by a small boy clad in pajamas and a dressing gown.
Well, hello there. Now, you'd be Christopher, huh?
Daddy's not here. He had to go and see someone. I'm minding Margaret and Johnny.
Oh, are they in there?
They're asleep.
Huh? Did Daddy say how long he'd be?
Well, he said only a little while. What do you want?
Your mummy sent me.
Mummy?
That's right. You like to see her?
Oh, yes.
Well, you just stay put while I make a phone call. We'll have her here in no time.
Forty minutes later, following a phone call to Mrs. Jacobs, Myrna Preston arrived at the Carlton to take charge of her children, who, needless to say, were almost as happy to see her as she was to see them. There was still no sign of Preston, however, and she agreed to get them home at once, leaving Study at the hotel to await the return of his quarry. Left alone in the room, the agent settled himself down in an armchair and lit a cigarette. He barely smoked it through when the door opened and a man whom he recognized at once as Harry Preston entered, carrying several large packages under his arm.
Chris, I'm back. The girl's still asleep. Chris.
They've gone home.
What? Who the devil are you?
Study's the name. Missing Persons Bureau.
Harry Preston remained quite still, making no attempt to speak, as Study explained what had happened and how it was that he came to be there. At length, after a silence of some seconds, the tall, bespectacled man dropped his parcels onto the floor and then gazed down at them, his expression one of sorrow, tinged with despair.
I bought them some toys to play with. I was going to surprise them.
You can still surprise them at home. What made you do it, Preston? Your wife's been half out of her mind.
I won some money on the pools, £50. I wanted to give them a good time.
By taking them away from their mother?
We went to the zoo, to the circus. I shouted them ice creams and drinks. Everything they asked for. I even went back home to get Jenny's doll to make her happy. I wanted them all to be happy. I wanted them to like me. Don't you understand that? I wanted them to like me. For the first time, I was able to do something for them. And now you've gone and spoilt it all, you and Myrna. Why did she have to interfere? Just tell me that. Why did she?
She's their mother.
And I'm their father. Doesn't that give me the right to make them happy?
Sure it does, but you...
If I wanted, I could tear you limb from limb. I could massacre you with my bare hands. In the army, they showed me how to break a man's neck. To wrench his throat out.
Now, take it easy, boy. We don't want any roughs.
With my bare hands. My glasses. Give me back my glasses. I can't see.
I guess you'll be needing a new pair. You just trot on them.
I'll kill you, I swear. I'll kill you.
I hate to do this, pal, but...
Desk.
Room 406 here. Get a doctor right away. There's a sick man up here. Very sick.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Harry Preston was subsequently readmitted to an army hospital where he received special care and treatment. Over the following 12 months, he was operated on by three leading brain specialists, and several fragments of previously undetected shrapnel were removed from his skull. He is now living a perfectly normal life. He has a good job, a bright future, and a wife and three children who all think the world of him. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.